Daniel chapter 11 is filled with prophetic discourse. Thanks so much for joining me for this third part in this discussion. I'm Dr. Fred. You're listening to another episode of Study, Grow, Know.
Welcome to Study, Grow, Know, where we discuss theology, prophecy, and current political issues from a conservative biblical perspective. Here's your host, Dr. Fred DeRuvo.
Hi, and welcome. Thanks for joining me. This is Dr. Fred. I truly appreciate you taking the time out of your day, wherever it happens to be in your day, to take some time to listen to this. And I hope these episodes and these sermon audios that I provide are beneficial to you. I certainly hope that. You can stay up with me and in touch with me through my two websites, studygrowknowblog.com, where I have all of my articles posted, and studygrowknow.com, where I have things like my books, et cetera, et cetera. So hope you'll avail yourself of that. If not, you just listen to these messages. I certainly appreciate that. And I hope that that you would keep me in your prayers or put me in your prayers, and that I don't fail the Lord, that I continue to study and show myself approved of Him, that I might rightly divide the word of truth. But thank you so much for listening to me. It's greatly appreciated. Now, in our last episode, which was part two, we managed to get through Daniel chapter 11, verse 5. And that's the verse, to help you recall, that tells us about the king of the south. Not by name, but simply as the reference king of the south. And from this and historical information, we know that that particular king was Ptolemy I Soter. And he was that very king. We also pointed out that when the Bible speaks of kings who are in the north or in the south, it is doing so using Israel or Jerusalem as the central point of reference from which everything else is noted. So in other words, because God considers Israel and Jerusalem to be the center of the world, and that's mentioned in Ezekiel 5:5 is just one place, the king of the south then would be nearly due south from Israel and Jerusalem, just as the king of the north would essentially be due north of Israel and Jerusalem. This would make the king of the north, according to scripture, connected to the Syrian dynasty. And we'll get to him soon and that whole dynasty. Now, as noted in our last article, Ptolemy I or Ptolemy the First Soter was important not only because he was one of Alexander the Great's most powerful generals, but also because Antiochus Epiphanes the Fourth is connected with that particular grouping of four generals who took over portions of the Grecian Empire upon Alexander's untimely death. And that was mentioned last time. Antiochus is seen by scripture as a type of Antichrist because of what he did in 168 BC with reference to the Jewish temple and the Jews themselves. Antiochus's actions directly caused the Maccabean revolt, as recorded in the apocryphal books of 1st and 2nd Maccabees. And we're going to get to that eventually in this study as well. Now, what's interesting is the Apostle Paul in the New Testament points out the ultimate man of sin, and that's an Antichrist who is referenced in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. And he is essentially going to repeat what was done by Antiochus during the middle portion of the coming tribulation. So what Antiochus did in 168 BC by defiling the temple, which we'll talk about briefly here in a moment, the Antichrist, the final man of sin, will do the same thing or something very, very similar during the final coming tribulation of 7 years. Now, sections of Daniel also compare Antiochus Epiphanes the Fourth with the coming Antichrist. And we'll include some of that in this set of articles too. But for now, let's pick it up in Daniel 11:5, and we're going to move on from there. Here's verse 5 again. Then the king of the south will grow strong, and along with one of his princes who will gain ascendancy over him and obtain dominion, his domain will be a great dominion indeed, unquote. All right, first of all, please note that the Bible predicted long before it occurred that Ptolemy the First Soter, or Ptolemy I Soter, would, quote, grow strong And he did just that. It's also important to note that one of his princes will also grow strong and gain ascendancy over him and obtain dominion. Now, the over him is referring back to the first antecedent. And the first antecedent, or the first mention of an individual, is Ptolemy I Soter. In other words, this prince would become greater than Ptolemy the first if we measure sizes of empires. Let me read the verse again. Then the king of the south will grow strong, along with one of his princes, who will gain ascendancy over him and obtain dominion. His domain will be a great dominion indeed. So we're talking here about what the prince is going to be able to accomplish. Historians tell us that this particular prince was another of Alexander's generals, Seleucus I Nicator, or Seleucus I Nicator, from 312 to 281 BC. He ruled Babylon in 321 BC, but by 316 BC, he came under attack from Antigonus, who was yet another one of Alexander's generals. It's very interesting here because Alexander was obviously the glue that held the Grecian Empire together. He was an individual who probably trusted no one, understood how men operated, understood that he would always have to deal with threats to his throne, and yet he was able to push it all away because of his power and his might, and people were more interested in following him than attempting to dethrone him. But after he died, the glue that kept the Grecian Empire together died with it, or began to crack and fade and become non-existent in a sense. So all these generals now are vying for position. So here, Seleucus I Nicator came under attack from Antigonus, who was yet another one of Alexander's generals. And because of this attack, Seleucus submitted himself to Ptolemy I for support. Ptolemy responded with military force against Antigonus. So this is a real soap opera that's going on here. Seleucus came under attack from Antigonus. Seleucus goes to Ptolemy I, asks for support. Ptolemy I takes his military and uses it against Antigonus, who is trying to unseat Seleucus. This allowed Seleucus to become ruler over all of Babylonia, Media, and Syria, a territory much larger than Ptolemy's. This is very interesting. See, that's fulfillment of the scripture. He assumed the title king in 305 BC and was the king of the north, referred to in this verse, verse 5. His dynasty lasted until 64 BC. So now we go back up to the verse. Then the king of the south will grow strong. That's Seleucus I, Nicator. Okay, he grew strong. And one of his princes who will gain ascendancy over him and obtain dominion, his domain will be a great dominion indeed. So the prince, who, as it turns out, is Seleucus. I know it gets confusing. I apologize. It'd be easier if you could see it, right? So Seleucus submits himself to Ptolemy, who was already ruling. But Seleucus is a king of the north, so he is coming under attack from Antigonus. And he goes to Ptolemy, and Ptolemy provides military support against Antigonus. And this allows Seleucus, who is the king of the north, the Syrian dynasty here, this allows him to broaden the scope of his domain so that he is ruling all of Babylonia, Media, and Syria. And his territory becomes much larger than Ptolemy's, just as the scripture, Daniel 11, verse 5, tells us, along with one of his princes. So the king of the south, Ptolemy I, will grow strong along with one of his princes, Seleucus I, who will gain ascendancy over him and obtain dominion. His dominion will be great indeed. Interesting. So Ptolemy supports Seleucus, who is fighting a battle with Antigonus. Antigonus is defeated. Seleucus, because of Ptolemy I, winds up with a much larger kingdom than Ptolemy did. I find that fascinating, that even though their names are not mentioned here in verse 5, they aren't called this by name, just the king of the south and a prince. even though their names are not mentioned, we know who they were in secular history. I find that fascinating. I hope you're following me. I apologize if I have not made myself clear, but you can also read these episodes or these articles on my blog at studygrownoblog.com, and they're all labeled Prophecies of Daniel, Part 1, 2, 3, etc. So you can go there and look for those too. And in there, I've included charts. And if you're like me, you need to see things to understand them. So I've included charts to help make it more available as far as the information is concerned, so it sticks with you. I love history, and I realize that many people don't. You know, so I've included these charts, and the charts are from Dr. Thomas Constable's notes on Daniel to help you, which will hopefully make it easier for you to appreciate all that has transpired in Scripture so far. Even then, it can be a bit complex. So once Alexander the Great died, his top generals divided up the empire. However, that didn't stop other generals and wannabes from trying to ascend their own throne by attempting to conquer the generals who were already controlled, you know, who were already controlled parts of the Grecian Empire. Remember, once Alexander died, the glue died with it. So that left all these generals vying for rulership. They all wanted to get a piece of the pie, as it were. This was life in those days. And in fact, not a great deal has changed if you stop to think about it. There will always be people who see themselves as great political leaders or even dictators who want to control the masses of people and gain what other leaders have for themselves. Today, a good deal of this is done in the political arena. But wars, conflicts, rumors of wars are also used as a means to overthrow someone. Political sabotage is a great tool that is being used today, just as it was used all throughout human history. People want what they don't have. And if that means overthrowing someone to change or get someone's throne, that's what they're willing to do. We've seen this in modern times with the ouster of Egypt's Mubarak, Libya's Gaddafi, and many others. It would seem to be constantly changing. If you look at the horizon in the Middle East and in North Africa, things never stay the same for long. These areas that are known as the South or the North of Israel, they're always in a state of flux. And as I speak this, as I first record this, it's interesting to note that it looks like Congress is going to give President Obama again what he wants in terms of the Iranian nuclear deal. It's going to be approved. It's going to go through Congress, and he is going to get what he wanted. And that's unfortunate, but I have to remind myself that God is in control of these things. They're being done maybe for evil purposes, but ultimately they will glorify God. Ultimately, they will put his name in the spotlight and give him glory. And that's the way it's supposed to be. So it would, even though we see this constantly changing horizon in the Middle East and North Africa and other areas known as the North or the South of Israel, we're going to know that that's the way it's going to be until the end of this age. And the Bible seems to be very clear on that. But let's move on to Daniel 11, verse 6, which says this. After some years, they will form an alliance, and the daughter of the king of the south will come to the king of the north to carry out a peaceful arrangement. But she will not retain her position of power, nor will he remain with his power. But she will be given up, along with those who brought her in, and the one who sired her, as well as he who supported her in those times. Unquote. Well, here's another soap opera, right? We have this daughter of the king of the south. She's going to go to the north. There's going to be a peaceful agreement. Apparently, it's going to look like it's a done deal, but it's not going to last. She's going to lose her power that she will have been given or gained through her union with the king of the north. And things are not going to go well. Again, this is in Daniel chapter 11. This is before it actually happened. So let's see what this is talking about. Let's parallel this or compare it with actual secular history. Now, it may not seem so at first glance, but this is very detailed. This one paragraph, this one verse that I just read is very detailed. Let's break it down according to the information provided by historians. Things are not well in the south or the north of Israel. And notice that Israel seems to always be caught in the middle. the king of the south, Egypt, the king of the north, Syria. Israel is in between there. So you can imagine all the armies that kept moving north or south, constantly going on, fighting, pushing back, running away, pushing back, running away. And all the deals and treaties that were to happen in Israel winds up having to deal with all this stuff, the fallout of it, either directly or indirectly. Now, as we noted previously, Ptolemy died in 285 BC, and his son Ptolemy II Philadelphus reigned from 285 to 246 BC. Now, as an interesting aside, Dr. Thomas Constable tells us that, quote, Philadelphus was friendly toward the Jews and sponsored the Septuagint translation of the Hebrew Bible into Greek. Now, I think that's fascinating. God does this a lot. He uses Gentile, non-Jewish kings who don't even know him to all of a sudden, they're friendly with the Jewish people. They want to go out of their way to do something nice for them. God uses those individuals to bring about certain things that help his plans, God's plans, come to fruition. I find that fascinating. God brings his purposes to fruition even in the midst of the many problems that these rulers faced, either because they themselves were evil or due to evil forces which sought to overthrow them. One or the other. God gets things done in spite of this. This should be a cause for celebration among God's people. The king of the north, Seleucus I, was assassinated in 281 BC. This placed his son, Antiochus I Soter, 281 to 262 BC, on the throne. Okay, so Seleucus I is assassinated. Up comes Antiochus I. Antiochus I died in 262 BC and left his son, Antiochus II, in power. So now we have Ptolemy II, the son of Ptolemy I, Ptolemy II in the south, and Antiochus II in the north. These two individuals hated one another. They could not stand one another. And in spite of this, and with all the political intrigue of, I guess, Game of Thrones, these two bitter enemies buried the hatchet, so it would seem, and found a way to create an alliance. And that is what verse 6 is talking about. After some years, they form an alliance. Okay, so they did that. Now, supposedly, according to scripture, the daughter of the king of the south is now going to enter the picture. Well, let's see what happens. So they formed an alliance, and they sealed this alliance, according to secular history, with the marriage of Ptolemy II's daughter, Berenice. And remember, Ptolemy II is the king of the south. And that's what the scripture says. After some years, they will form an alliance. The daughter of the king of the south, who's the daughter? Berenice. She's married to the king of the north, who at that time was Antiochus II. Okay, so far scripture is batting 1,000 here. I mean, it's not two. They formed an alliance. The daughter of the king of the south, Berenice, goes to the north to form this alliance to carry out a peaceful arrangement. She marries Antiochus II. But here's the problem. And this is according to secular history. In order for Antiochus II to marry Berenice, he had to divorce his first wife, Laodice. Ah, now you can see that, okay, here's the fly in the ointment. As you can imagine, she was not at all happy with that particular turn of events. This is what the first part of verse 6 tells us. Berenice was given to Antiochus II by Ptolemy II in order to create an alliance. But notice the second sentence in verse 6 tells us that she, Berenice, will not retain her position of power. The messenger speaking to Daniel at this point says, will not retain her power, because remember, none of this had happened yet. So he was speaking to Daniel based on a future perspective. This is going to happen, but in the future, there's going to be this alliance, Daniel, but she will not retain her position of power. That's what verse 6 says, but she will not retain her position of power, nor will he remain with his power, but she will be given up. These are all future tenses. Very interesting. Okay, so verse 6 goes on to tell us that the he will not keep his power either, as I just read. Who is the he mentioned here? Well, you've heard the phrase, a woman scorned. In this case, here is what happened, according to secular history. No sooner had Ptolemy II died, remember he was the king of the south, he was the one who gave his daughter Berenice to the king of the north, Antiochus II. No sooner had Ptolemy II died than Antiochus remarried his first wife, Laodice. Unfortunately, as far as Laodice was concerned, that didn't settle the debt. She had Berenice and her infant son both murdered, and then, to top it off, she poisoned her own husband, Antiochus II. This is fascinating. History also tells us that Laodice ruled in Antiochus's stead for a short while. A woman scorned. This is what happened in fulfillment of Scripture. This is what's going to happen, the messenger tells Daniel. Some years they will form an alliance. Who? The king of the south with the king of the north. Ptolemy II with Antiochus II. And the daughter of the king of the south, the king of the south is Ptolemy II. His daughter, Berenice, will come to the king of the north, Antiochus II, to carry out a peaceful arrangement. She marries him because it creates instant family and, you know, loyalty toward family. But she, Berenice, will not retain her position of power, nor will he, that's the king of the north, remain with his power. She will be given up, along with those who brought her in and the one who sired her, as well as he who supported her in those times. So we see the fulfillment of Scripture. Laodice decides to have Berenice and her son poisoned. And then she decides to poison her own husband, Antiochus II. That'll teach him to get rid of her through divorce or annulment. That'll teach him. So that's what happened. I find that fascinating. And again, this was told to Daniel before it actually happened. Very, very fascinating. And by the way, Dr. Constable throws in a couple of side notes for us. He tells us this, quote, Laodice is the woman for whom the town of Laodicea in Asia Minor was named. And you can read about that in Revelation 3:14. It's just one place. Similarly, the towns of Antioch in Syria and in Asia Minor received their names from this Antiochus II. Antioch of Syria was the capital of Syria during the Seleucid dynasty. I find this fascinating, if for no other reason than I enjoy learning about origins and history. What we need to remember is that God is omniscient, and since he's omniscient, he sees everything at once. In other words, everything for God is always in the eternal present. He's not fortune-telling. He is seeing. As it happens, we don't see things that way. It'd be fascinating to see them that way, but we don't. We remember things from our past. We try to live in the moment, but whoops, it's gone. And think about the future constantly. God sees my life from beginning to end as though it was all happening, every bit of it at the same time, because he's in the eternal present. How could he be anyplace else and be God? Is it any wonder God can see how everything turns out before it happens? On our timeline, that is. Then ensure that his will and purposes come to fruition? While we can't appreciate that, we can and should marvel at it. I mean, all this could easily make up one huge soap opera, couldn't it? But we're not even halfway done with the 11th chapter of Daniel either. And we'll be back with more. And in the meantime, and until we meet again, I pray that God will open your eyes to show you how blessed you are in him.
You've been listening to Study, Grow, Know with Dr. Fred DeRuvo. Please join us each week for new broadcasts that deal with theology, prophecy, and political issues from a biblical, conservative perspective.